midnight right here on listener-sponsored WBAI New York.
After the burning of Smolensk, there began a war which in no way resembled...
Stay tuned for Extinction Rebellion Radio here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org. Online is 6:30 p.m.
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI.
Welcome to the Rebellion.
This is Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI with Matthew Kearney and Elise Lane. Extinction Rebellion is an international movement that uses nonviolent direct action to press for action on the climate emergency. You know, after a long hiatus due to COVID, Extinction Rebellion in New York City came back strong over 12 days this spring, from April 13th to April 24th. So much is happening to put the climate crisis back into people's consciousness, if it ever left. Disaster after disaster around the world. Scientific report after scientific report showing we have a slim chance of avoiding catastrophe. In popular culture, the hit movie Don't Look Up put the climate crisis back in the center of people's consciousness, despite competing events such as the horrible war in the Ukraine, which we maintain and will continue to show is indisputably related to the climate crisis. And by the way, we reviewed the movie Don't Look Up on a previous show. You can get it other shows on our Extinction Rebellion Radio podcast, which is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Spreaker, and other platforms.
This Spring Rebellion has focused its attention on three of the institutions that most need to change and have been most resistant to change: the government, the financial industry, and the mainstream media. We're recording this on Earth Day, April 22nd, while the Spring Rebellion is still going on. So far, there have been many small actions that took place around New York over the 12 days, but four large events especially stood out in this particular campaign, and we're going to talk about each one of them.
Extinction Rebellion's first demand is tell the truth. So appropriately, the first major action, which took place on day three, that is April 15th on a Friday, was called Media Do Your Jobs, Tell the Truth March, and was directed at the mainstream media, particularly the broadcast media. Now, the event began with a rally outside the headquarters of NBC News and Rockefeller Center and proceeded to the headquarters of ABC in Lincoln Square on Manhattan's Upper West Side. In the following audio clips, you can hear the crowd chanting at the event. Jack was there, and he is also here. Jack, tell us about what you saw.
At this event, Extinction Rebellion Radio spoke to Meera Dasgupta, a remarkable young woman who has served as the 2020 Youth Poet Laureate of the United States, the first person of Asian heritage to do so, and who now serves as the Global Climate Clock representative. It was in both capacities, wearing both hats, as it were, that Ms. Dasgupta appeared at the Friday action holding the electronic climate clock, which details how much time, according to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, remains for us to reduce greenhouse gases, and also the rate at which renewable energy sources are being created to deal with the problem. Here is Ms. Dasgupta speaking about her role in the event.
I also operated the U.S. Youth Poet Laureate, and I'm in both spaces today, but essentially the climate clock takes into account the IPCC report. Continuing to proliferate as fossil fuels proliferate as well. However, at the same time, we have to consider that the time is ticking down and that the time is now to act and not only utilize our words, but utilize those words in order to not be complacent.
At the same event, a speaker addressed the connection between climate change and health.
up in this city and every city when it gets hotter. There are more murders. There is more death. Make the link between climate change and health. You have to make the link between climate and every story, because climate is the story.
The second major action took place on the following day. So that's Saturday, April 16th, day 4 of the rebellion. Titled, We Will Not Be Bystanders. This event reflected Extinction Rebellion's second demand, which is act now. Beginning with a march from Manhattan's Washington Square to Madison Square Park, the purpose of the event was to tell those in power that we refuse to stand idly by as they fail to act on the greatest threat our species has ever faced. At Madison Square Park, 13 people who blocked the road were arrested as other activists encouraged them and cheered them on.
I was moved by the speech of an Extinction Rebellion activist named Jennifer, a former teacher, who talked about how she became involved in the organization. Her speech shows that the key to becoming part of XR, or of the movement in general, is a burning desire to do something about the current crisis, a willingness to volunteer whatever level of skill and time commitment one can. Here is some of the audio that I recorded.
I don't want to be out here doing this, but I am. I was a public school teacher for 15 years. And to get to a point where you can't look kids in the eye anymore, and they say, what are we going to do? And you see, I have this one particular 15-year-old, pretty apathetic, really struggling with things. And she was doing this unit on climate change, and she looks at me and she goes, what are we going to do? And I was like, I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do. And that was before I joined XR, and I had this like pit in my chest about worrying about the future and about the crisis. And I'm here right now because I feel like the static in our culture is so hard to cut through. Climate change is complicated. It's really hard to explain. Where did it come from? There's roots in colonial extraction, in racism, in slavery. We can't put it into 30-second bits. It doesn't get on the news. It takes a while to explain what's the problem. And when somebody's got the science and they're like, yeah, sea level's rising, things are happening, but, you know, like, we're gonna deal with that, right? Like, people will deal with that. And it's gonna be in the future. The Yale Climate Whatever Center did a study of attitudes towards Americans in September 2021. And the increase in the number of people that, yeah, they know climate change is happening, it's huge. Like, it just keeps going up. And around 70% of Americans say, yeah, we think, you know, climate change is going to affect plants and animals. And then a little bit fewer percent say climate change is going to affect future generations. And you go from like this 70% of real concern down to when they ask, are you concerned about climate change affecting you personally? The percentage drops to about 40%. And the thing that like kills me is that those of us with, you know, those of us with privilege, those of us who've grown up in the United States, we are the number one fossil fuel emitter historically. We have done this, and the people who have done the least to create this crisis are the people who are feeling it first, who are feeling it the worst. Like, how do I live with that sense of complicity? How do I live with that sense of, like, what is it for me to do? What can I do? As one person, I can't do much of anything. But as a member of a community, we can do an enormous amount.
that trust in different governmental processes, democratic decision-making processes. I'm going to say it like a citizens assembly, a bit of a nerd for them because they're awesome. Put decision-making power into the hands of people who actually have to deal with the effects of those decisions. That trust in each other, that new way of working. There's so much unlearning that I've done in this work in climate. That's what keeps me going every day, and that's what I can say. What are we going to do? We are going to, one person to one person, we're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about how it affects all of us, and it affects all of us now. We are going to do it together.
You are listening to WBAI 99.5 FM New York, and this is Extinction Rebellion Radio with Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney. The two of us are talking with Jack Baldwin about the Spring Rebellion protests in New York City, a series of events in April targeting government, media, and financial institutions that can be doing oh so much more to address the climate catastrophe.
Monday the 18th, day 6 of the Spring Rebellion, was Tax Day. That won't be news to most of the people listening to this program. You remember that was Tax Day. So on that day, XR joined with many anti-war allies, such as Veterans for Peace, World Can't Wait, and NYC War Resisters League, to protest the use of our tax dollars to fund not only endless wars, but also the world's biggest polluter, the U.S. Department of Defense. This was one of many instances in which Extinction Rebellion has acted intersectionally, allying itself with like-minded organizations toward a common goal. In this case, stopping both futile wars and the horrendous environmental degradation they generate. In unseasonably chilly weather, the contingent marched south from Federal Plaza in downtown Manhattan to Wall Street's famous Charging Bull sculpture just north of Bowling Green Park. At this site, the marchers engaged in theatrical performances, such as one in which activists dressed as billionaires drenched in stage blood and covered their bodies with fake dollar bills, symbolizing the obscene profits made from the death and destruction of the military-industrial complex. The activists continually chanted slogans supporting Mother Earth and condemning war and the financial institutions that fund war.
Activists erected two teepee-like tripods on Broadway, just south of the point at which, you know, Broadway splits in two, and locked themselves down in the middle of the road on both sides, preventing all vehicular traffic from moving. Now, the observing protesters waited in trepidation for a long time as police used power tools to release one of the lockdown activists. Her name is Holly. And release her from the tubes which bound her arms. Now, at last she was set free, one might say, and then handcuffed and led away to the cheers of the crowd. The method the police used for reaching and then arresting the civil disobedience activists at the top of each tripod was, to say the least, controversial. When the police started to use power tools to shorten each of the wooden legs of each tripod to bring them closer to the ground, there was a great deal of consternation among the protesters who objected, fearing that the activists would fall to the asphalt and be hurt. However, the cops would allow anybody to approach the activists, and they continued their crazy, peculiar work. Now, in the following, we can hear the crowd singing a song called We Rise, as we hear in the background the grinding sound of the power tools used to, quote unquote, free the lockdown activists. Let's take a listen.
In prayer, we find ourselves here.
In total, 9 people were arrested that day. I was there, and one could feel a tremendous sense of solidarity between the arrestees and the protesters supporting them. As we had marched through the Wall Street area and people strolling through the area observed us, I wondered what they were thinking. Nobody seemed hostile to us, but I wonder if they understood that we need them to join us to make this movement work. The following day, day 7, I went down to Washington Square Park to catch the first day of the 4-day Extinction Rebellion Festival in Washington Square Park. This festival included lectures such as our Heading for Extinction talk, the one which we in Extinction Rebellion give to all new recruits, both as an introduction or refresher about the climate crisis as a whole and about the organization's strategy for dealing with it. Training sessions such as de-escalation and nonviolent direct action, or NVDA, and even film screenings.
So one of the more unusual events of the first day of the festival was the Mending Circle held by the Fashion Affinity Group. This is a group arranged in a circle on the ground in the park, which mends old clothes to discourage people from buying new ones and thereby contributing to the fast fashion industry that hurts the environment. As the website says, the purpose of the circle is, quote, to explore how the simple act of mending and the time and care that entails may lead us on paths to repair our torn and ragged world, unquote.
I was there and spoke to Cindy Clark, Isabel Varela about the mending circle and what they hope to accomplish.
Well, we're here asking the question, if a simple act like mending your socks, your clothes, could also help to mend the world. Because if you can slow down enough to mend your own clothes, you are not buying into the fashion industry, which is exploitive, all about overconsumption, and based on fossil fuels. Most of our fabrics, especially in fast fashion, are made out of fossil fuels. Polyester, acrylic, nylon, it's all fossil fuels. And we need to get off of fossil fuels, which means you need to stop buying new clothes.
And is there a symbolism about mending the world with this, you know, mending the environment?
It's about appreciating what you already have, because it's building a new relationship with yourself, with the clothes that you wear, for a better planet today and for a future. Because whenever you start taking better care of yourself and your clothes, you're also helping the planet all at the same time. Those actions it's a ripple effect.
On Wednesday, April 20th, day 8 of the Spring Rebellion, Extinction Rebellion New York City occupied Citigroup's corporate headquarters Tribeca during the morning rush hour. Now, Citi is the second largest funder of fossil fuel companies and the largest funder of coal, or basically climate change death, the most destructive energy source. By sitting on the floor in front of the turnstiles, activists blocked workers' entry while holding banners reading denial equals death. 6 activists also stood on the front desks chanting, stop funding climate change. Now, it took over 2 hours for the NYPD to remove all of the protesters, and 19 people were arrested. As of the day we are recording this program, which is Friday, April 22nd, you know, Happy Earth Day, there were 3 days to go in the Spring Rebellion.
On Saturday, April 23rd, the penultimate day of the rebellion, the last of the four major actions will take place, called Listen to the Science, March for Science. It will be on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. According to the latest IPCC report, which we plan to talk about in the future program, we have less than 3 years to cut global emissions in half and avert devastating rise in temperatures. So why aren't we paying attention? This final major action will combine the three targets of the rebellion's 12-day protest: media, finance, and government.
Now, all this we've talked about so far has just been about New York. Meanwhile, on Friday, April 22nd, on Earth Day, Extinction Rebellion Boston kicked off the No New Fossil Fuel Infrastructure campaign with a Freedom from Fossil Fuels tour. That's what they're calling it. As the XR Boston website says, quote, "We must act now." The latest IPCC report states that the climate crisis is happening so rapidly that it could overwhelm our ability to adapt. In Massachusetts and New England, our government, influenced by the methane gas and manufacture industries, is continuing to build new fossil fuel infrastructure in climate justice communities and move too slowly on transitioning to renewable energy. And the demand of this campaign kicking off on Earth Day is no new fossil fuel infrastructure. No new fossil fuel infrastructure.
Meanwhile, protests have been happening nationwide. There was an advertised rally in Flint, Michigan on April 23rd called Earth Day Rally to Fight for Our Future, for Climate, Care, Jobs, and Justice. At the same time in Pittsburgh, there was a public art day of action under the banner of Fight for Our Future. There was a similar event in Thorndale Park in Colorado Springs for the same day. Likewise, Liberty Plaza in Atlanta, Georgia. Also, an in-rally at the Arizona State Capitol in Phoenix on April 23rd, a rally in Lafayette Square in Washington, D.C., right across from the White House, planned for April 23rd. Chicago saw a student-led protest for April 22nd, beginning at Buckingham, and the list goes on and on and on. Oklahoma City, Annapolis, Maryland, St. Louis, Greensboro, North Carolina, Louisville, Kentucky, more frankly, than we have time to list. Earth Day has people protesting climate inaction in every part of the country.
This is Extinction Rebellion Radio with Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney on WBAI 99.5 FM New York. Along with Jack Baldwin, we are talking about the April 2022 Spring Rebellion protests in New York City and in Boston, hearing about some of the big protests that have happened to demand action on the climate crisis.
On Earth Crisis Day, activists with the New York City chapter of Extinction Rebellion, the global climate justice movement, took part in a disruption of major corporate media entities, including the New York Times Company, News Corporation, and Gannett. This act of civil disobedience was intended to disrupt the distribution of these corporations' flagship daily publications, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and USA Today, respectively. This was taking place in Flushing, Queens, in New York. This action follows a long history of nonviolent civil disobedience as a tool for societal change, such as sit-ins during the Civil Rights Movement and traffic obstruction by women suffragettes. The purpose of today's newspaper blockade is to draw the public's attention to how mass media corporations like News Corporation, the New York Times Company, and Gannett are failing to cover the climate emergency frequency it deserves, in some cases prioritizing entertainment of subscribers. Extinction Rebellion stands behind the right to free speech and a free press and views the breaking of certain mundane laws as a public plea for societal change. Well, there was tremendous enthusiasm in all the actions. There was a tremendous commitment. I think that there was a lot of pent-up energy from the months of lockdown during the COVID crisis. And I think
years.
Right? And I think a lot of that pent-up energy got expressed. And there was tremendous creativity, too. And if the victor were chosen by energy and creativity, we would definitely win over our opponents in the corporate world of government. But what we need is, and I'm making this appeal to people listening to this broadcast, is for people to who have been on the sidelines, who have been watching with approval at what Extinction Rebellion is doing, to join us and to make commitment according to whatever people can afford in terms of time and in terms of their skills. And there's a place for everyone in XR.
This has been Extinction Rebellion Radio.
Is the mic check for Cat Radio Cafe.
Testing.
Testing.
Tune into Cat Radio Cafe Tuesday night at 9 here on WBAI.
I'm Janet Coleman.
I'm David Dozer.
The Displaced Playwright. On Tuesday, May 3rd at 9 p.m., we'll be joined by Andrew Berman, architectural and cultural heritage preservationist and executive director of Village Preservation, to discuss the wins, losses, and upcoming celebration in its ongoing battles with the builders, gentrifiers, and wrecking ballers.
Tuesday night at 9 here on WBAI.
Cat Radio Cafe.
Hey, do cats drink coffee?
If it's brewed with fish.
Even a goldfish?
Joy of Resistance.
This is Fran Locke of the Joy of Resistance. The leaking of the Supreme Court majority's plan to take away the right to abortion, which was fought for and won in 1973 and has been part of our lives for 50 years, will not and must not stand. Join myself, guests, and listeners, including you on the phone, this Thursday, May 5th at 11 a.m. to noon, as we catch up on, express, and strategize about how the majority in this country is going to prevail. That's Thursday, May 5th at 11 a.m. It's time for the resistance. Enjoy of resistance.
We were keeping organized together. We have come a long distance. Joy, joy of resistance. Sisters of the joy of resistance. No corporation, government, religion, husband, father, brother, gonna define our existence. Joy.
Here is Alexandra Tolstoy reading the first page of her father's novel from the original text.
Eh bien, mon prince, Jeanne et Luc.
This is Carolyn Goodman, chairman of the board of WBAI, and I'm going to start this reading of Tolstoy's War and Peace.
This is Joseph Heller reading pages 149 to 160. In October 1805, Russian troops were occupying the towns and villages of the Archduchy of Austria, and fresh regiments continued to arrive from Russia.
Tune in for a full archival reading of Leo Tolstoy's War and Peace on Radio Unnameable. That's Thursdays at midnight.
My name is Dustin Hoffman, and I'm reading Book 1, Part 1 of Mel Brooks' translation of War and Peace.
That's a full reading of War and Peace on Bob Fass's Radio Unnameable, Thursdays at midnight, right here on listener-sponsored WBAI New York.
After the burning of Smolensk, there began a war which in no way resembled traditional warfare.
Previous program was Extinction Rebellion Radio, heard Tuesdays at 6:30 at 6:30 p.m., excuse me, 6:30 p.m., usually after the WBAI evening news. Stay tuned for more programming coming up in this hour. We Only Want the World with Sansara Taylor will return at its regular time next Tuesday at 7 p.m. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. This is a listener-sponsored community radio station providing you a Pacifica state of mind since 1960. More programming coming up. Stay tuned.